right, this is session number 10 for Eduardo. It is April 13th, 2009, and it's 3:23 Hawaiian time. And Eduardo, say hello to Ion.
Hello, Ion.
Good evening, good evening. You have
things? Yes. I would like to connect to three scholars who are no longer with us in the physical sense, and I would like to ask these scholars a couple of questions for all three at the same time.
Okay. Let me give a little groundwork to make sure that we're easy, that we have a complete understanding. You want the information from these scholar physicians that you know of that are past or non-physical, and you'd like to communicate them basically all their answers at the same time. Okay. Okay, very good.
Good. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ed.
Can I ask the question? Can I tell you the three scholars and ask the question?
Of course.
Okay. The three scholars that I want to connect with are Johann Huizinga, Marshall McLuhan, and Jean Baudrillard.
Okay, that's an interesting combination. All right. The answers aren't going to be the same. You understand that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Ion, I would like to spell Huizinga, unless you already know. It's H-U-I-Z-I-N-G.
We know.
Okay. And Jean Baudrillard, B-A-U-D-R-I-L-L-A-R-D.
We get this from you, so it's good. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay. What I'm interested in to know from these three scholars has to do with language, the apparatus of speech, and thought. Specifically, I'm interested to know what is happening or what will happen to the brain process of tactility under the condition of the blending of the physical and the non-physical, and how this framing process of tactility will affect our consciousness.
Spectacular. Okay. First off, we may break this down a little bit, and you may get to redefine those different aspects that you're asking just to make sure we get it covered for your understanding. Let's start with thought. Okay? Thought. Now, you may run a little, this is probably the closest to a McLuhanism, if there is such a thing. In the thought, or the process of thought, drives the mass consciousness. And then the mass consciousness then drives the thought. That creates what you describe or know as a meme. Those memes then are activated in society as a whole, either at a subdural level or at a more open level, and that tactility expression or the tactile representation of that is in the exponential explanatives that come through your new, we went from printing press into radio, newspaper, TV, internet, and it just keeps growing exponentially, and that has a causal effect or a tactile representation of that thought being thunk, okay? But all those different mediums of expression or communication or media, maybe the best word, is all derived from the issue of thought, okay? So the thought that precedes, they comes most times in a level or degree of contrast. For example, when they invented the printing press, when they were, and actually the problem was the selling of indulgence. And so therefore the printing press allowed them to more quickly and more cost effectively print indulgences, which made money for the Catholic Church. So there was a problem. The problem was they couldn't make money fast enough. The solution was the invention of the printing press, that's the first place in time that really was a notable, changed everything. It sort of put the moment. business, so to speak, because it was so much faster and so much easier. And it's wanting, the wanting of those communications was increased because of the ability to have it mass-produced. And then that led and spawned into your information superhighway that you describe now. Now we'll go to another one, another aspect of thought. Another aspect of thought is the part of creation is divisible by the concept or the thought that becomes part of the spirit man, which is very different than the McLuhan side. It becomes more of the soul's inspiration would be a perfect word. Then you have another aspect that was not as complete. The third aspect would be more from the thought being a pattern or a schedule. It would be a scheduler of creation. That would be from your third aspect. And we also have an aspect different from all three, if you're interested.
I would like to refine my question.
Very good.
My concern with the entire apparatus of language, speech, the entire architecture that involves the mouth, the fact that speech comes from thought, and with the thinning of the veil, will we be able to have, to do away, to obsolete this, what I seem to find very, there's an insufficiency in using language and using words. So my question is, if we are going to go into thought to thought, direct thought to thought, without having to use the apparatus of speech and language and semantics, will we still have tactility from thought to thought? Is there a resonant interval that exists if we retrieve the Lemurian or Atlantean concept of ESP?
Hey, it didn't come from them, but yes, that is precisely necessarily the case. But you have to have an effect, you see. This ESP is not new. This ESP is not, many people have been doing it forever. You've been doing it forever yourself personally. Have you ever been thinking about somebody that you hadn't heard from in a long time? Then all of a sudden you come along and they'll send you a card or call you on the phone or send you an email.
Absolutely.
Sort of out of the blue. Well, that's ESP. That's
and is there
on.
Tactility from thought to thought? Is there an interval or is it completely blended?
It's completely blended, but now the tactility.
So there is no tactility.
Well, now, wait a second. Now, let's be clear. The tactility comes from the human aspect of the resonance. So, if you have a thought and you want to talk to somebody, and then you
with
think
thought.
About them. With thought.
No speech involved.
No speech involved. And then, and they instantly ring the telephone, or if you walk over to the phone, and it just so happens to start ringing, and you know who it is before you answer, then there is no tactility in that expression. You knew who was calling. Now, if there is tactility, okay, but you control, then you could be surprised that a week later that your long-lost buddy sends you a card just saying, hi, thinking about you, you see. There is a degree of tactility depending on how close you are to the vibrational vortex of that wanting or that reality of a clear flow of ESP. Same thing is true with emails. Sometimes you send emails and they go instantly. Sometimes you send an email and you might call somebody and say, did you get my email? And they go, well, just a second ago. Well, I sent it 30 minutes ago. Well, why is it that there's a break or a tactile break in time for that 30 minutes? You say, same causal effect. Different music, different instruments. You can play music differently. And some people hear the tones and it seems raspy or running together. Other people can hear the individual tones between the notes being struck. Same thing. That's a degree or an aspect of the tactility of your perception of the resonance of the vibration of your hearing. And that hearing is done in the mind. So, The answer, the absolute answer to your question is it's just becoming, it's just becoming, it's just becoming, it's just becoming to a place where you now resonate with the causal effect that you can, without any words, express feelings, emotions, and thoughts from one human being to another human being that also can resonate with the non-physical part of themselves, and that's the part of the thinning of the veil. Now, let me be clear so we're not getting on a wrong track, on a false premise here. The veil has not thinned from our non-physical aspect. The veil is as thin as it ever was, okay? Here's where the thinning comes from. From your physicalness, because you're the creator, you wanted the grid realigned. You wanted the magnetic poles to be adjusted a little bit. You wanted the world to correct, to heal, or change, or adjust itself, you see. And your wantings, that's what thinned the veil. It wasn't from our side, because on our side, we don't create. You have all the ability to create, totally. From non-physical, that's the point of staying alive, or in physicalness, or not transcending to from the physical to the non-physical. It's because of your knowing that you have the desire to mix it up and through your contrast, create. The creation part is what jazzes you about being alive. Because otherwise it's just going to work and paying your bills. And that's not very much fun. But that you could actually absolutely have a causal effect and move heaven and earth in your universe, that's what gets your juices flowing, or makes, as the Catechisca say, the sap rise. You see? So it's your expression or your creation that has caused the perceived perception or tactility, if you want to use that good word, in the thinning of the veil. And that's what's causing this interaction to be more simple, easy, and fluid.
Hmm.
Just that easy.
Can I ask Ms. McLuhan then, is tactility eternal? Has tactility always been?
As people know, there will always be a tactile representation of the current meme that's being expressed in your now.
Fine. Thank you. I'd like to move on to my next topic.
Marvelous.
What comes before thought, or what has come before thought? What precedes thought?
Typically, in your world or your knowing, we would say nothing, but that's not exactly the case, because sometimes the thought is caused by a contrast in your physicalness, okay? You don't think about going to the bathroom before you have the urge or the biological function to empty your bladder, correct?
Correct.
You don't just go walk by a bath, but you can walk by a bathroom and go, well, I'm here, I might as well go. But now that thought puts you in the action of going to having the physical expression of emptying your bladder, because it's handy and you're there. But typically, you don't go sit in the bathroom and wait until your bladder fills, you see. So therefore, the pressure of your bladder getting full causes your mind, the receptors in your mind, to activate in you the thought that it would be very convenient for me very quickly to stop to go to the bathroom. So, a wanting, a contrast, can cause you to engage in an emotion-driven thought, which then sets you in your vibrational proximity of that reality, then that can become your physical manifestation. So the answer is nothing comes before thought, except that there are occasions, and the contrast or resistance sometimes promotes the idea that you want something a different way. Because the only reason that you do anything in your physicalness is for the thought that it will make you feel better. Why do you eat? Make you feel better. Why do you go to sleep? You're tired. Rest will help you. Why do you exercise if you exercise? Because the thought that it will have resistance in your body to make you a more efficient working machine.
Okay, fine. I'm interested to know, again, continuing with the topic of thought.
Yes.
Is the thought begin in humans at the instance of conception, or is thought capable of being carried over from past life traumas according to total biology?
Well, past life traumas, meaning you are in your physicalness, you have a trauma, and then it comes into your new physicalness?
Yes.
Growth.
Well, does that happen?
That's an issue, because the answer to that is absolutely no. But then you'd have karma, and if you didn't do it right the first time, then you'd come back to fix it or change it or make it better or get it right this time. And if that be the case with the way you operate your causal universe or your creationism, most people would then be delegated to come back, or the tactility of that expression, to use a McLuhanism, would make you come back as a cockroach with a disease, you see. Because there is no way for you to get it wrong, and there is no way for you to get it done. So any trauma that comes forth from non-physical, there may be resistance regarding yourself in your new presentness, but it doesn't come from one instance of you recounting your past life, because it just doesn't work that way. What happens is you're alive and you're physical and you have a spirit or a non-physical part attached to your body. That's how the doctors can verify that you indeed are alive. Do you agree?
Yes.
Okay.
So can we say that in humans, the first thought occurs at the moment between egg and sperm? Is there a first thought at that very instant of conception?
Okay. Once the sperm pierces the embryo, the egg, and there is a solidification that stops any other sperm from piercing that creation, when that happens, then the cell divides the very first time.
Yes.
When the cell divides the very first time, that's when thought begins.
That is the first evidence of thought in the human condition.
That is perfect words. Perfect words. Perfect
and
words.
And what is that first thought in all humans? Is there a first thought, or is it proprietary to the individual soul?
No. No. Because at that point, it's still coming in the presence of non-dipping. If you had a gulf of souls and you had a dipper, you dip a soul out of the gulf. And at that point of dividing, that's when that soul is in that human beingness of that zygote, I guess at that point is what your terminology would be. But the first thought, when that soul is implanted, entrusted in another human being, isn't that amazing? In a womb, that first thought is, okay, divide, okay, divide, okay, divide, okay, divide. And then as those cells divide, that's its only thought. The thought is to divide, because without dividing, it doesn't matter if you think all the best thoughts that have ever been in the history of the universe, it doesn't matter until you get divide. And then after a little while, divide turns into, okay, form lungs, form capillaries, form. Because you got to remember, in the placenta, it's being fed by the mother. The blood flow, the energy flow that's causing or allowing that to divide is the very essence of that interaction.
Okay, I understand divide as doubleness. So can we say that the first thought is a form of doubleness?
Yeah, okay. Those are great words.
That's great.
I mean, don't make it a theocracy, or otherwise you'll make a religion out of it. So it's not quite that big a deal, but yes, there is that doubleness that we need to be more. We are one, and we need to be two. We are two, we need to be four. We are four, we need to be eight. We are eight, we need to be 16. And then you start going exponentially, and it starts going pretty fast. And it goes so fast sometimes that it causes morning sickness. Imagine that. Mm. That shock, that change, that whole process. Why do you think they divide it into trimesters? That's a process. Otherwise, the baby could be, you could get pregnant, you could have relations, you could get pregnant, you could have the baby in 24 hours. But you need a span of time between inception and the birth, you see. Didn't
Fine.
Humans set that up.
Fine. I'd like to move on to my next question.
Very wonderful.
I'm struggling with language, so I'm going to do my best.
Did you have another language that you preferred?
You mean other than English?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just each, I find, I'm struggling with the right, trying to get the right words. So here goes my next question.
Okay.
I understand that you have to allow that knowing to come into your physicalness. Now, what causes unallowing of essence to manifest? What interferes with the allowing or the knowing or creating of source energy to come through? What blocks that? What blocks the allowing
resistance.
In humans?
Yeah, resistance, okay? That's perfect words, it's resistance. Now let's develop that just a little bit. You're born, okay? And you are resistance-less. Do you understand that babies are kind of born, they don't have to have OBGYNs to actually complete the task?
I understand.
A long time, they're just born. Well, when they're born, okay, they have no resistance, and that's why babies are just so delicious. And if you can catch them at the very beginning, you see, you resonate, they resonate perfectly from source energy because they just came from source energy. They know nothing else. And the first thing that happens after the cord is divided, chewed, cut, sawed, whatever happens in that process, when the birthing takes place, ever how that takes place, the first contrast is they give them a stimulus, used to smack them on the butt, now they kind of rub a little here and there, and cause them to cry or to activate the breathing mechanism that is their lungs. And that's contrast. And then it's cold. And then it's hot. And then I'm hungry. And then, the whole thing start happening from that we cause. And then we go into the place where they actually live. They choose to stay forth in physical to create. Now, they might be surprised that they wanted to be born in Malibu, and they're in Minnesota, and so they're not so happy about that. But it's okay, because at that stage, they really don't care. They just want to come forth and create. And if they're in a ghetto, they'll work it out and become a great basketball player, if that be necessary. You can overcome all that process. But what you're asking is what causes that separation from the non-physical part of you, source energy. It's what your scriptures talk about when it's the absence or being absent from God. You see, that's a disconnection, you see. And that disconnection is when you start being driven by the McLuhanisms that let you know that the world is coming to an end and you're going to lose your house and the economy has fallen and nobody's going to have a job because everything is bad. That catches on and you catch and you hear that. And then you realize that you'd hoped for so much more, but it was pretty much over. Then you have a disconnect. And then then you start using language, words, that then settle into your belief system. Oh, now, what's a belief? A belief is just a thought you've been thinking for a very long time. That's all it is. So if you change things, thoughts that you've been thinking for a very long time, you then have causally changed your belief system or your belief. All right. Now, once you have that disconnect, and that disconnect comes into your reality, that Lou Dobbs on CNN was indeed right, that unemployment's going to be 9.5%, and pick a topic. It really doesn't make much difference. And you start resonating in that post-information, disinformation, and you come and you resonate with that, you cause a disconnect within yourself. And then Lou Dobbs then can have an exponential effect or a causal effect on your thought, your emotion, which can then move you into the vibrational proximity of losing your house and losing your job and not having enough gas or having all the gas in the world and can't pay for it, and global warming and the tsunami is going to come wash you away, and on and on and on and on and on. Those are what cause disconnection from the non-physical part of you that is always pure, positive love. You say,
fine. How do we best change thought and language to stop the interference and creating of this disconnect between physical and the non-physical? How do we best change thought and language so that we can have more thinning of the veil and more direct blending with the non-physical?
How fabulous, how fabulous, fabulous. Perfect words. You've taken us to places we've never been before, and the heavens are rejoicing because now your resistance regarding your reality is causing you to have a thought which turns into a question that sets the new pecking order for your reality. Here's how you do it. You can't change the whole wide world. The world does not need saving. The world does not need healing. The world is not broken. You are the center of your universe and only yours. Okay? So if you just spend all your energy and time thinking the thoughts that affect your universe, then that can and will, according to McLuhan, catch on and become a meme, and the whole wide world will adjust itself based upon the manifestations that are available. Do you have a Palm Pilot?
Or no.
A Palm? Okay.
No.
You understand that technology is available to you.
Yes.
If it's your choosing, you see.
Yes.
So if you create what you're asking here in your universe, then at that point then becomes available to other people in other universes or neighborhoods or towns or cities or states or countries or worlds. So here's what you do. You come into a place where, in a simple way to describe it, of a simple process, because you don't want to make the words that seem to be the problem difficult. In every action that you take, ask this simple question first. What's the fastest path to my joy?
Hmm.
Okay, let's say you hate brushing your teeth. Okay, you don't care to. And to brush your teeth would not be the fastest path to your joy. Well, then never take action if it's not the fastest path to your joy. Period. Never do it. That doesn't mean ever. It just means it's that moment in time, because it can change. Because what happens is, after you sort of roll along the day, all of a sudden you have this grunge on your teeth and you don't feel comfortable because it's kind of like icky. And then you do that because the reason you brush your teeth is the thoughts that'll make you feel better. It's not to keep your teeth in your mouth, because they're going to fall out anyway. You see? So
interesting.
That process, if I'm getting you there now, that process in anything, for example, it's not the fastest path to my joy to go to work today, then don't take that action. Because if going to work solves all the issues, then you wouldn't have the question, you see. Because the money isn't the answer to your happiness, nor does those actions. Now, if those align, if those actions are aligned, let's say you do something that you love. Let's say that the work that you do for free. Well, then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you can get paid to do something that you do for free. And it's great. So enjoy that, you see. Then that becomes the fastest path to your joy. And you're increased exponentially to whatever it is that is you're wanting. Now, the thought process, okay, affecting the thought process in a 3-2-1 expression, and somehow you kind of understand that, we already get, but you understand that. So that the thought, okay, and or where you are that you like or don't like, okay, because you are where you are, and most of you humans take yourselves most everywhere you go. Few times you go places that you don't take your physicalness, but most everywhere you go, you take yourself. So, if you come into that place, at each experience in which your thought leads you to the fastest path of your joy and leads you to that action, what happens is it just gets more and more blissful. And that blissful state makes a capsulation of your expressional experience that allows your thoughts to now change, to change your wanting, your asking, your the things that cause contrast that make you ask for a new pair of shoes. See, if you never had a wanting, if you never asked for a new pair of shoes, you'd have one pair of shoes for all your life. They'd never wear out, you wouldn't notice, and that can be your experience. But it doesn't seem very fun to you to have the same pair of shoes forever. But it can be your expressional experience if you want to. Okay. All right. Now,
fine. That brings me perfectly, like a dovetail, to my next question.
Yes.
So, Ion, the way I understand it is that the motivation of joy is the best counter to the resistance.
Absolutely.
And if that is correct, if I understand that correctly, then what is it in humans? What is the cosmic origin of the masochistic impulse or the impulse away from joy? What's the cosmic origins of that in humans? And what drives this masochistic away from joy impulse in us?
Well, they don't see it. You can pick somebody if you want to. Adolf Hitler thought he was making the world a better place. You see, that was
so simple. What you're saying?
Sorry,
it's so simple. What you're saying, I get it.
Yeah. Because they don't. They see that it's a fact. Okay, let's do bank robbers. No, let's do heroin addicts. That's fun. Why does anybody do anything for the thought that in the doing of it will make them feel better? Why do you have alcoholic abuses? Because they have an issue that they can't deal with or don't want to deal with, and the alcohol, increased alcohol level in their bloodstream causes a euphoria, a blissful disconnect from the issue that's causing them to want that, and therefore it's the fastest path of their joy to shoot something, drink something, smoke something, pump something, whatever, and in that process, if they achieve a more blissful state, you see, then that becomes the fastest path to their joy. And if they do it long enough, guess what happens?
It becomes misery.
Well, it can, but after a point, it gets to a point that's not really what they were after, so they change their wanting. And look here how it works. It's so much fun. You get hooked on, quote, certain substances, and then you decide you want to quit, and they even put you in the hospital if it gets to be a big enough thing, if that's where you're pushing it, and the doctor won't take you off of it immediately. They will wean you off of it because you're so connected to the euphoric state that substance brings you. You will not allow, you would rather go into non-physical than not enjoy that exposed, expressed condition of bliss. However misguided, but see, you can't get it wrong and you can't get it done, you see.
Mm.
Chewing tobacco might give you a little high, but it First off, it'll probably make you think of a dog, I guess is a good way to say it. But it's not wrong to try that, but then you get to choose. Well, that may be fun for some folks, but it really didn't do much for me. So thanks, but no thank you. Strong drink, same way. You know, wine is a staff of life. Well, it's wrong to drink wine. Well, no, it's not. It just may be wrong for you to drink wine. And that's from a choice, not because somebody said something's right and something's wrong, because you can't get it wrong. If you can get it wrong, then you can get it done. If you can get it done, then that would stop the exponential increase of the universe. But that's not going to happen.
Fine. I'd like to move on to my next question. I'm trying to understand that in the thinned veil landscape, it is now an alternative to the guilt that civilizations and religions provided for us for social order, and that kept people within their savage limitations. How are people going to behave ethically under the new conditions of a thinned veil? What will be the new ethic limitation that will stop them from behaving savagely?
What do you describe as savagely? The way bill collectors are activating and operating now, some would consider savagely.
I agree.
But the folks they're trying to collect the money for think they're not doing enough. Some people think your government in the United States is acting savagely, and other people think they're not doing enough. So who's going to set that ethnic or ethic code of ethics? There isn't one. There isn't one. Oh, it was ethically okay to come and destroy the Indian culture in order so you can have a place to be. So in order for you to be right, everyone else in the universe must die, you say. And you're going to do what I want you to do, or I'm going to bomb you, or get a war, or talk about you, or ruin you, or take you to court, or on and on and on and on and on. See, the ethics of that, the dichotomy of that is you get to a point where you don't care. And once you get to a point where you don't care, then it doesn't matter what they do. The ethics of that become, if you're nice to somebody, you want them to be nice to you. If you're mean to somebody, you want to be nicer. If they're mean, you want them to be nicer. And that wanting becomes an expression. That emotion that's caused from that causes a contrast which redefines what it is that you're trying to create. And then the next thing you know, you can even go to New York City where everyone supposedly is mean and they'll be the most pleasant, nice people in the whole wide world. You see? Just in the ethics can be derived on your plane and the whole wide world will line up to what it is that meets your expectation because it's your creation. So now you don't have to worry about it. How is it that the murderers and the murderees get hooked up together anyway? How does the rapers and the rapees get hooked up together anyway? How is it that a gangbangers can have a drug war, all right, and they driving through their subdivision or project or whatever they call that these days, and they shooting at each other. Got great big guns, and they just tearing up everything, putting out 100 rounds a minute. Now, nobody's covered. Everybody's shooting straight at each other, and a four-year-old girl in an upstairs apartment two rows over will catch a bullet in the head. How do you line that up, you say? And yet, while one they're 5 feet away from, are we there?
Yes.
Oh, there was a beep, and I didn't know if you had lost out. If we were
no, I'm here.
Okay, and how do you get to the point of the people that was being shooting at each other? None of them get shot. They don't even end up in your ER. But the 4-year-old little girl catches a bullet in the head and dies, goes out immediately. You line up from the vibrational proximity of the throwing of the bullet and the catching of the bullet. Same way with the rapers, same way with the pedophiles, same way with everything. It's a, you have to be in the vibrational proximity of it. Otherwise, everybody would have died of the Black Plague, remember?
Mm-hmm.
But some of them didn't line up with that, so they weren't affected by it. See?
That's perfect. That again brings me almost like a perfect dovetail to my next question.
The tongue and groove is works pretty good after a little while.
I'm enjoying how it's flowing. So the vibrational stream.
All right.
I'm interested in how the seven chakric centers, crown, brow, throat, heart, solar plexus, sacral, and root are going to be affected by
they're going to be
the thinning of the veil.
They're going to be opened. They're no longer going to be clogged. They're going to be used as a tool to allow yourself to adjust any causal. You understand why you have those. So that your physicalness can interact with non-physical and your sensory heightened sensory perception can then come into a point where you don't have to have so much clearing. Then your third eye, your center chakra, then it becomes another way to see. But people get snot in their eye. They don't clear, they get clogged, so therefore that becomes limited or less. This is the same example. Let's say you don't believe that, okay, because it's a belief of a thought you've been thinking a long time. Okay, let's take that to the physical sensory perceptions. If you get an infection in your ear and you no longer can hear, you go stone cold deaf, guess what? Typically what happens is you become much, much, much hyperactively more attuned with your other five senses, you see. So this opens up the thinning, your thinning of our veil allows those to open. They become a more flowing, free channel, and if that's your wanting, it can be your experience as of like this red hot minute to a point where you can know where you are. You know when you walk into the bank and get in line what your experience is going to be. You know you can park second space from the left from the front door if it's raining and that's your wanting. You know that you're going to get whatever it is that is you're asking and you're wanting. That's the next logical step. And once you know that and those different chakras are actually opened, and that's still, it doesn't matter how thin the veil gets, you have to have that as a direct wanting to experience the joy and the bliss that operating on all cylinders, maybe is a better way to say it, operating on all cylinders is much, much, much more efficient than having two burnt valves.
And how can humans best develop direct wanting for themselves, for each individual?
If you have a burnt valve, then you get a tune-up, and you tune in, okay? You tune in. How do you receive a frequency that's in a radio box? How do you receive that frequency? You calibrate. You tune it in to that frequency, okay? And then you can be happy or mad that what you tune into is what you want or don't want. But it's okay because you can tune into something else. But once you line that up in that right proximity, you don't have to change the tuner. You can just experience your wanting on that very frequency of where you are. Isn't that amazing? Do you want to hear a song? Whatever the song is, I don't know what song you want. Pick your song. And you turn on the radio. You got to turn it on. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, there's just as much frequency whether your receiver is on or not. But if you choose to turn it on and you can tune it ever how you want it, let's say it's already set on your, quote, favorite station, but they don't just play your favorite song. They have lots of songs. They even have some talk radio. Ooh. You come to a place where you're tuned, and then what happens is you can have the experience of having your song just show up on the radio that you then can enjoy, and you don't have to do a thing. If you've got your box on, and you're tuned to a frequency, doesn't make much difference what it is, and you have the volume to where it's to suit you and please you. Same way with a car. Some people like to go 100 miles an hour. Some people like to go 40 miles an hour. Either way, if it's out of whack of what it is they're wanting, it could be a white-knuckle flight. Or it could be quite a boring ride. Isn't it interesting that the Concorde was the best thing we ever made? And that was wonderful. And the next thing you know, the experience became that that was just too fast. And then the next thing you know, they started crashing. Never had they crashed and had many problems. And all of a sudden, everything became a problem. Now that whole technology is no longer available. Uh-oh, where would McLuhan say that went? It got deferred to another time.
Fine. Again, I just want to focus a little bit on the last chakra center, the root or base or sex drive.
The ground.
Is there a deeper meaning to the sex drive in humans, a deeper impulse other than pleasure and procreation?
Well, wait now. What's better than pleasure and procreation? If that's the fastest path to your joy, then absolutely. But there's another part of that element that you're asking about, but you want us to develop a little. That's the grounding, the grounding part. Because if you're not grounded, you see, then sometimes the aberrated version of a sexual relationship becomes your driving force to your joy. You see?
Exactly.
So
it's exactly
grounded.
I'm asking about this aberrated version.
Oh, okay. Then if you're not grounded, then it becomes the sexual relations, the drawing of a copulative experience can be experienced all by yourself with a opposite sex, with same sex, with dogs and cats, and you know, y'all can take this just as far as you want to because you create it, you see. You have anytime, every conversation is two conversations. One side or one end of that stick comes into the place of the perfect creation process, which means you fall in love with someone, someone falls in love with you, and your space is that's around you. Sometimes you notice people will bump into your space or they'll get too close and it makes you uncomfortable and you'll back away or move away. Some people you want to get so close to them that you want to lick the inside of their ear. Well, that's pretty nasty, is it not? Yet. Some people you just can't get close enough to, okay? That's the two non-physical parts resonating with each other. Then what happens is you come together, okay? And that's pretty good. It's a lot of hormones, but hey, it works. It's a very blissful, joyous creation of taking two and making them as one, okay? Then as that develops and you get comfortable or next logical step that you feel right in that loving relationship, which only works if you will never hold your partner responsible for your joy or happiness, of course, but that's another topic. But then what happens is the next thing you know, everything lines up because you're lined up and then creation takes place and a new life comes forth. That's okay. There's other folks that are croaking and leaving, and there's always folks coming in new.
So the rupture of this desire or direct wanting or joy, the rupture of that between two souls is caused by a shift in direct wanting towards something else?
No, you are. It's not a shift. It's the creator's universe. So the creator can set it the way they want it. You see? And even down into the point of you want to talk about pornography or whatever you want to figure. Pick a Larry Flint. He decided that it was okay and he should be able to do whatever the hell he wanted to do. And he was going to whoop the man that said it wasn't so. See? And he pushed that envelope and that contrast, which made it where you could choose or not choose. The same way you don't have a PDA, and you could have. You see?
Mm.
But the PDA isn't bad. Okay? And then if the pornography pushes against what you're resonating, then you can choose not to participate in it. Or star in it, or even watch it, you see. And then all of a sudden it has no effect on your beingness, Because you're aware of it. You're aware of PDAs, but they're not the devil incarnate. You see? Neither is anything else. It's fun that way, isn't it?
Yes. Fine. Okay, I'd like to move on to another topic. I'm wondering... Yes. When will we see a real-world working application of Code Fusion, and which country will have it first?
All right. There's a few aspects of that that we would like to go into, but it's going to require a little redefining on your part. When you talk about the practical application of Code Fusion, specifically, what do you mean?
I mean a real-world working Code Fusion process that will directly benefit a community of humans.
It's already been created.
And which country has created it first?
That's a little tricky. All of them will receive it, the benefit of it, at exactly or precisely the same time. And they may not all choose to activate it, okay? But all of them will receive it at the same time.
Okay.
Do you see why I had to redefine that a little bit? Because
yes, I do. I understand.
There might have been an aspect that you were asking that we could give you some insight on, and we'll continue to further it if it's your wanting. But it has already been, the technology's already been around for a very, 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 very long time. Okay? The working models, there's several working models now, but there are some issues and some problems with it. Okay? And they've even figured out because of their wanting, or maybe the 100 monkey syndrome, that there's something that you have to adjust to use to make it more efficient, you see. Because what's so odd and unusual about that whole process is every other source that is created, every other source that's created, it takes energy or effort or action on your part. So you pump something in, twirl it around, and something comes out that then you use in the form of energy. Electricity, coal, petroleum, solar, wind, all those aspects. You've got to put something in, and something comes out different that you can control to convey for your consumptive purposes. Do you agree?
I agree.
All right. This technology is very, very different. This technology now comes into a place where all you do is put the components and the elements together, start it, okay? Start it. And once you start it, then it continually gives energy.
Right.
Without the splitting of the atom, which then causes your old uraniums, your PT-57 waste nodules that you have to plant back in your earth, which are radioactive. And that's a big problem. Oh, wait, the uranium that they got out of the ground was radioactive and it didn't cause a problem. But storing the used or burnt cells, the cylinders, storing those after, I guess, the enrichment process makes them very dangerous. Very interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
It's the landfill from hell. But yet it came out of the ground radioactive, you see. But this technology is different because its only byproduct or waste would become water, H2O. Or sometimes it's hydrogen peroxide.
Huh.
H2O2.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that because the extra oxygen molecule falls away once it's dispersed. You see? Or put it in your swimming pool, it'll work great.
Will implement it, will there be a favorable, positive response to their implementing it, or will there be a negative response to their implementing it from the rest of the countries that are not or have chosen not to use it?
Well, just like sex is a good idea, as sure as it's a good idea, you will have an aberrated, what you
version.
Call abominable version of the very same thing.
Huh.
You have the choice. You individually have the choice. And then it doesn't even have to be about countries. It can be about you individually. You don't even have a PDA and you haven't stopped living.
Right.
So just because they decided, let's say they decided they wanted to stay on the grid, even within a country, that's perfectly all right. There's nothing wrong with that. But you're going, no, this will change everything. It now changes everything. Well, okay, great, wonderful. But if it's not in their perceived perception that it's better, that's why things give you cancer or activate your cancer cells, because your powerlessness activates that new gene of replicating cancerous or malignancies.
Fine. I would like...
We can play with that more later, but it's okay. Yeah. We sort of went off the edge there for a second. So
it's all right.
You can reel us back in. It's fine.
I'm comfortable off the edge.
Okay.
I would like to connect to other people who have left the physical plane, and I want to know if they have anything to convey to me.
Perfect.
And I'm thinking of my brother, Maurice, who is no longer with us.
You mean Mari?
And I'm thinking,
You mean Mari?
Maurice, yeah, Maurice. Maurice.
Everybody called him Mari.
We called him Morris.
Yeah.
Morris.
Sorry, I was close. Okay.
And also my friend Mike. And I'm also interested to know about my friend Henry. And my grandfather, Martino, who I never met. And my grandmother, Arinda, on my mother's side, who took care of me as a premature baby and died when I was 1 year old.
Now, you may have to search through your family with some of this stuff to maybe for vindication or verification for your own knowing. You see what I mean? Because the ones you're checking with, they're... You'd have to verify this backward to make sure that it resonates with you. So
okay.
We can get you to that place. Love of your grandmother's baking. She was a spectacular baker. I mean, just uncanny. Marvelous at it. And she also loved to do needlework. And there might even be some of her work about. She was very, very... fast with it, so there was a lot of it. Her fret work. She was very proud of it, and so there might even still be some of that around if they were careful. And if, knowing her, your family knew how important it was to her, you see, because she would always give those as gifts and the what you call equipment samplers and the needlework things that were done. And then, of course, the wonderful pies, wonderful breads, wonderful baking. Baking was just over the top. The smells, the wafting smells are pretty spectacular. So as you verify that with other members of your family, they can confirm that for you. Okay? And then that becomes a even more of a resonance. And now, from your grandmother specifically, she saw you for the very first time in her eyes, her knowing, her being, her everything absolutely was just he had a little experience in handling newborns and then preemies especially. See, everybody else said you had to be careful. You can't do this and you can't do that. But she didn't have that for one second. She never saw you as anything but whole and complete and perfect. And that's why you're in physical now, because you resonated with that. And the lullabies that she'd sing, that you may or may not remember that, but she would sit with you in her little short stack rocker, little oak rocker that was short. She was short. And she would sit, and she wasn't a comfortable chair, but she had to be in complete control of you in that rocker. So it wasn't like something where it's a big overstuffed comfortable chair where you're sitting in and you're with her and you could fall asleep holding the baby. This, she had to really pay attention to where you were, you see, because it wasn't like the most comfortable chair. But she would sit by the fireplace and rock you for hours and sing lullabies and absolutely kept you moving. There was something about not laying you about in your premature state. The rocking or the moving, she had to keep you moving. And in her system, when it was light, because that was the only one, that was the only shot you had, because it was touch and go there for a bit, you see. She brought you to a place where you confirmed your already established position to stay in physical form. And it was the love bond that you had with your grandmother that actually brought you into the place of confirming that, they, yes, it is very good to be in this wonderful planet called Earth. And that love, that pure, intense love that got you able. She didn't die. She didn't die. Well, she's still not dead. But she didn't transcend physical humanness until you got to a point where you could survive on your own. You were the reason for her to hang around. She was the reason that you hung around. It was not until you became on your place of being able to take it on your own. If you couldn't have made it on your own, she would have stayed around. But once you got to the place that she promised that she'd get you through, that's when she decided it was no longer fun to be in physical. God. Okay. Or transcended into physical, not physical.
And my brother Maurice?
It was a little bit of turmoil. It wasn't big turmoil because it was not a big thing, okay? But he was always out there, that you recall, correct?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody was playing, he'd be out the furthest. If somebody was swimming, he'd be out the furthest. If somebody was jumping, he'd jump the highest. He was always the never, never introverted person. He was always the outgoing side. As far as that, even not necessarily so much in physical, but in his mind, he was always the outgoing.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it about the arrowheads? There were arrowheads.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from him, but you'll have to confirm that. But there were three arrowheads that were pretty important, that were a gift. That he always kept in his box with his baseball cards.
Okay.
Under the edge, the way his bed was, it was like under the foot, the edge of the foot of the bed. So it was in the corner of the wall. That's where he always kept it.
And how does he feel about where I am now in my life? And does he have any?
It was always a competition. So. Once he left the physical, then it became conversion into insight as far as you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. And if you fall down, get up, and you can do it, and you can do it. And mostly you can do it. You see, for beforehand, there was always the competition, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that competition went away, and he got on your team. Me.
Okay, do I have time for one more question? Or?
You have time, yes. This is bliss. If you're enjoying it, yes, we can ask more questions, yes.
Okay. I feel like this question has been answered.
Well, we'll clear it up, that's fine.
Okay. There is an incredible... immense sadness surrounding my mother. It's a sadness and an anger at the same time. They're conjoined.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know how I can best go past it or let go of the incredible sadness and anger surrounding my mother.
But that's okay.
That seems to be always with me.
Yeah, it's okay. Here's the trick. Here's how you do it. We've given the ethereal, and yes, it has been answered, but now let's get down to the practical. We've got the sweet by and by, but you're asking now about the dirty here and now. Okay?
Yes.
Dirty here and now is, look, if there's any part, any aspect, any essence, even her perfume, which it was a, not tea rose, but it was very close to that, it was pretty strong, meaning specific, a scent that would be to her. If you do you remember that scent?
She's still alive.
Well, does she wear perfume?
She has a particular scent, and
yes.
I've always associated that smell with her.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. That's the point.
Yes.
That's the point. If you can somehow focus on any aspect of her that you can appreciate or love or understand or get past or delight yourself with, and maybe not delight's too strong a word, any part of her that is her, if you can draw that part to you, then what happens is the non-physical part of you will resonate with that part, and you can change your asking so that your question becomes different regarding your mother. Okay? And that's how you do that. And if there's parts you can't get past, then for God's sake, don't play with that. You see? I mean, if you're afraid of snakes, don't go to the snake show. You see? But if you could find an aspect of a snake, a serpent, that you could find pleasure with or could resonate with, well, they do live a long life, and they do eat rats that can get in your feed or your barn, and they do sort of stay out of your way, and they're not really a problem unless you step on them, and the snake thing's coming from you, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
If there's some part you could attach or appreciate about a snake, okay, then draw that part of the snake to you, and then your resistance regarding all snakes can be softened. Can be softened. See? That's sort of the way to sort of look at that. So any part of her that you can appreciate and love, and it might just be that she's not around you. You can take it where you are, and that's
okay. Those are perfect words.
Yeah. And then what happens, it softens it. Then what will happen is, in a very short window of time, you'll come to see your mother in a different light. She didn't mean it. She never set that up for it to turn out the way it turned out. She never wanted it that way.
I know that intellectually.
Yes.
But emotionally, I still feel, when I'm in her presence, a certain sense of despair.
It's actually disdain from you.
Mm.
You see, but don't. It's okay. You didn't get in it overnight. You're not going to get out of it overnight because you've already set the rules that you're going to go by regarding it. And your physicalness won't let your non-physicalness jump past that because you have rules. Then you're going to go by your rules. It's your universe. You see, but if you can somehow just reach for any best part that is anything. Write it down on a piece of paper. This may be a way to clear this up for you, finally, once and forever, because you have beat this horse to death. And,
mm-hmm.
and every time you get it over, you know, with it, there it is again. And you think you don't think about it for a little bit, and you go, okay, I'm finally done with that. Then you resonate it right back into your cycler, and there you go again. And it just keeps, it's the gift that keeps on giving. You get you a notebook or a picker or some bound, some form, and you write down, to make on one page, you know, like a composition book, you can open it up, and on the top of one page, put, Mom, why I don't not love you. don't not love you. And see if you can displace it a little bit with a double negative and write anything there that works. And then on the other page, why I don't love loving you. Okay? Or, basically, every issue or problem that has to do with your relationship with your mother, put it down. Okay? List them. And now, of course, the negatives are going to be more than the positives. Okay? But at least get them down and out. Get it out. This, you have played this like a sebaceous cyst. You know what that is?
Yes.
All right, and the only time that you can heal a sebaceous cyst is when you lance it. You've got
you
to pop it and get that corruption out of it, because there's nothing wrong with having the corruption. Here's the problem. It causes pressure. And then every time you move, if you've got one somewhere where no movement reminds you of that pressure, it hurts. Well, the pain, it doesn't get easier. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and more pressure and more pressure. And that's wonderful, because after a little while, it'll get so much pressure that it'll either pop itself or you'll see to it. So that contrast is wonderful. And there's nothing you have to do other than lance it. Mm-hmm. And then once air hits it, it immediately starts healing. And it's healing is your wanting, that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if it's not, the other way to do that is make your list out specifically. I mean, down to the end. Every aspect. Everything in your life that's wrong because of your mom. Everything that you didn't get a chance at because of the way it worked out and the way it was, and it's her fault, and you're mad as hell, and you're not going to take it no more, write that down. And you just be wide open with that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a few things on the positive side, and they're a stretch. Okay? Once you get through with that, never, ever, 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 ever give 1 second's airtime to the things that are wrong. Okay? Only give your undivided attention to the things that are palatable for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a little bit of time, once it softens a bit, then what happens is that list could increase of the things that you can love and appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And the only reason it's a problem is because you see it as a drawback or a void in you. You see? Otherwise,
correct.
Why would you care?
Correct.
You are where you are, you gave me birth. I mean, you know. Foster mothers get that same place sometimes, you see. You see.
Correct.
So, that's the way to do that. And then after you play that and you have a little better feeling regarding it, and you want to talk again, we'll develop it down to the exact what went wrong. Oh, and yeah, we're going to spend a lot of time on that. But you're going to come back to a place quickly to where you might be able to somehow find it in your heart to forgive her.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. There you go. Now, did we say you had to bring the snake to your house? No. You don't have to have a snake in your house to have a healthy respect for it. You see? But you could come to a place to where it wouldn't be offensive if the snake was in your house. It wouldn't be the end-all end-alls, would it?
No.
But you're not there yet, so it's okay. It's okay, because you are where you are. And better than that, she is where she is. And you understand that she is so disconnected, even now, because of how it went. And now it's been such a brooch or a breach that it can't even be discussed to a point because she wouldn't know where to start and you're not having it.
That's correct.
You see? And so it's better just to leave it alone. Well, then we start making the links of the chains of pain. And if you could somehow... And like I say, I didn't say move in or nothing. Just be easy with it. Take it a little bit. Take the part you can stand. Okay? And work with that. You know, and only give your undivided attention to that. And what will happen is a short window of time, you will have a little easiness about it. And then your wanting can be, well, maybe having a conversation on the phone wouldn't be so bad. Or maybe sharing a meal might be okay. Or maybe, you see, you know, and it comes. And once she sees that, then it might open. ability to whack away the hardness or the scaliness that's in on her that doesn't allow you to reach. You could say, I'm sorry, I can't help the way I feel about you, but you're my mother, and I'm going to love you anyway, and we'll get past this, and I don't understand, and I don't have any better feeling about it than I did, but enough. I'm gonna take you as you are, and I'm going to love any part of you that I can. Well, see, even if you did that, it still doesn't allow her the place to break the walls that she's built around the guilt and the pain and the anguish of what actually transpired.
Yeah.
You see? So that's why I said the double negative. It's a pretty tall wall. It's a pretty thick wall. But it's okay. Write it all down. Get it out of your system. And then never look at the page where you wrote all the yucky stuff down. You may take a couple of pages. It's okay with me. Mm-hmm. Every birthday party that got missed. Every time she said she was going to be there and she wasn't there. Every time. Go down. Every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Down to the time when you were supposed to go to the fair, to the circusy fair that came to town and come, and you were promised that you were going to go and you didn't get to go. And not one word about it was ever said. Sorry, or it just didn't happen. It was as though it was not promised.
Fine. I just want to quickly ask about two very close friends.
Hey, Ed. Why don't you, you didn't get, when McLuhan came in, why don't you ask Beaudyard something, and then maybe do Henry, because you threw a bunch of names out, but, you know.
I wanted to connect with Mike and Henry, two close friends who died very gruesome deaths, and I just want to feel from them or know from them something.
It was, every death is a suicide, so it became kind of gruesome. Or it was kind of gory as far as that goes, but it really wasn't. It was
okay.
A point where they had the opportunity to go out. And
okay.
It was easier to go out than it was to stay. You see, what choice or future did they think they had?
Hmm.
See? I mean, it's, you know, you can have the tiger by the tail, but the fear and the problems and the issues that were surrounding both of them differently, but both of them the same, became just an easy, quick way to jump in front of the bus.
Whereas, Ed, you didn't go out. Ask about that.
Ion, I'm going to share something very, very private. I've died quickly. Three times.
We know.
And I'm still here.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how I was able to defy the odds of that.
You didn't defy it. You chose. You did not defy it. You chose. You chose to stay in your creation, and a lot of and I'm not necessarily saying it was all for the right reasons either, okay? But you still chose. It was your choice, you see. And you chose, even if it could have been easy to go and say, "Okay, I'm done," but you weren't done. There were too many left hanging chads for you to work with.
Yes,
and so therefore you decided that you was gonna, that you would stay in your physicalness, and that you would stay here, and you would create, and you would interact with the non-physical part that is you, on a larger scale, and that you would know and already do that the Creator God is already in you, because that's the non-physical part that is you anyway.
Mm.
So you could have jumped out of the airplane at 40,000 feet and still not died. You might have been in a rough physical shape, but hey, you don't have to leave. I mean, there's a lot of folks that have been in a bad shape that are still alive.
So there was a lot of strength behind my choosing.
No.
Is strength the right word?
No. There was a lot of choice in your choosing.
Okay.
You just chose. And you have a choice every moment. You understand? Some people
I do.
you know, you can choose that. As long as it's fun, you should be here for a fun time, not for a long time. You see, so many, it's like your beast. Your beast want to go out of this, out of their life at the top of their game. They don't want to hang around and have tubes in the nose and catheters in places that aren't comfortable and have a chainsaw rip them open and fix things and all that process. They don't want that, and neither do you, you see. But if it means staying in this physicalness or checking out, well, there's a little bit of room for that kind of thing if it's just a matter of, oh, I need a little time to for my body to regroup, you see. Now that's a little different conversation. But it's easy because you wanted to create. That's the only reason. And you made that choice and continually make that choice. And your life then becomes an example because you know the alternative. That's why I'm making this interaction with the non-physical that you're experiencing now and will have other exchanges with and can do all this your own self is because you resonate because you are so close to that stepping, well, as we call it, a step, two steps from the grave, as y'all describe it. When they get done with the meat sack and they chuck it in a hole and cover it up, you know, it's kind of amazing. But that process, you see, allowed you to have a resonance that other people, maybe who have not been that close to that blissful experience, the second time you died, let's just have be specific if you want to get to it, the second time you died, you almost died, in your words, meaning. Mm-hmm. The second time that you checked out, you remembered the first time that it was the most wonderful, euphoric, blissful feeling that you've ever felt in your life. There was no resistance. And so it was a very tempting opportunity to say, it can't get better than this. And it, the only thing that stopped was, and I forfeit my ability to create. You're like, okay. And then you went back and it hurt. You remember the pain when it first came back?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't so much fun, was it?
It was unfathomable. It was beyond words.
And, right, and now the worst of it you don't remember, but the parts that you start remembering, guess what that brought you back into the place of? Contrast. And you went, ah, if it hurts this bad, I must be able to create. You see, and that contrast, you had to fight. Well, you don't really fight, but you had to come back into the resistance. That's how you build the muscle, it's resistance. You see? You didn't have resistance, you'd never build a muscle. Mm-hmm. Resistance that builds the muscle. And the strength that you're discussing is the handling of the contrast that was your experience. That actually opened up your chakras more than the average folks. Otherwise, you wouldn't even have that ask.
Right.
You wouldn't notice that that mattered. But when your sensories, our sensory perceptions of things get a little askew, you immediately jump right on it right then. Correct?
Correct.
Because then you know you don't want your third eye chakra full of snot and clogged up. You want to be able to see more than your eyes see. You want to feel more than your feelings feel. You want to know. You want to know, and that the world may know becomes quite a little mantra that you like to play with. And it's a delightful place, and don't make a big hoo about it, because if you start focusing on that, then that becomes a whole other point of contrast, and then you got to go. Basically, the short version is eliminate most of the false premises. And if you have a question, ask and get it straightened out and cleared up, so it resonates right with you, because you're creating this thing as you go. And once you understand that, then you get a little more particular with where you give your undivided attention. So in your world, the perfect solution is, I just love it when the solution shows up the same time the problem does.
Right.
You know, if you're going to get a flat tire, the best place to do that is at a filling station.
Right.
Where they're all right there, and it's a 10-minute thing, and it's not a big deal, and you're not in the bowels of nothingness, and out of cellular range or, you know, left to die, you see, because it's just a flat tire. It's not a big deal. But if you can look at things that way, that can be your experience. Then it becomes an utter focus of joy. What's the fastest path to my joy? And if it, whatever that is, take that action. And whatever that's not, wait. Do not take that action. Don't take the action at all. And it doesn't matter. It's okay. They're not going to eat you. They're not going to kill you. They can't. Good. There's nothing they can do to you. And once you come into your power, guess what? You don't really care what they think anymore. And then they don't know what to do with you. That's right. the magical aspirations of creations. And this interaction, see, is a co-creation where you get to sort of tap and play with the non-physical part that you to resonate back and forth. And the parts that are really, really, really delicious, play with those. And the things that maybe rubbed against you, leave them aside. Put them in your mother's column. If she won't care, it'll be all right. And that way you have a clearing process that catapults you into the marvelous creator that you are. You cannot know. You cannot begin to understand that you can be, do, or have everything, anything that is your wanting, even a good relationship with your mother. How do you get there from here? Well, it's doable. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You can't do it all at once. You'll get indigestion. But then again, indigestion's better than no digestion at all, isn't it?
Correct.
Indeed. Well, very good. And
thank you very much, Ion.
We are very deliciously complete.
I feel very full from being at your banquet.
Yes, indeed. You're welcome always, always.
Thank you very kindly.
Okay. We're back.
Hey, JW.
Yes.
Wow. So I guess I'm just wondering if you have any impressions or thoughts from our session.
I have a bunch. Well, some of them, you know, if you take photographs and you put them and you flip them, it's like what they would use to make films out of, where you flip them and you can see them jumping rope or whatever.
Yes.
Some of it was even like that. One wonderful one is your, I guess it would be your, some old lady cooking. Kind of short, medium build with her hair really, really up. It was always up.
That would be my grandmother.
Okay. And just always.
She had a beautiful 1950s bouffant that she kept her hair up. I've seen
always,
it in a picture.
Always.
Yeah.
And it was
she
always
was stunning. Stunningly
indeed.
Beautiful woman.
Yes, indeed. And and very well proportioned, of course. But and when you say grandmother, it's not like a grandmothery picture.
No.
Not grandmother. It's just more like
not at all.
Your grandmother.
Yes.
Exactly. And let's see. Your buddy's pictures playing, kind of like a ball and, you know, like, you know, where you play fort and just all kinds of just playing in the, like what you call the schoolyard with the, like a, not a jungle gym, it's like a monkey bars. A lot of that kind of stuff. A lot of, like doing something about a lake. A picture of a lake. And then there were a few strange pictures with the, well, I don't know. I'm not quite sure how to describe it, but it was a lot of hospital stuff.
Hmm.
I mean, like pictures in the hospital, like here in the hospital.
Yes.
A lot of waiting room pictures.
Hmm. Okay.
It was kind of strange. Well, the strangest does surprise me, though, because you hear the, when I get to hear the recordings later, I'm like, oh, my goodness, how did we get there from here?
<You know>? Right. Is it stopped?
in the car. I'm driving home. Give me 10 minutes.
Even where you are, Bob, I can see what's going on.
Yeah. So that'll be the last word.